100 episodes. This is the 100th episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. We've made it to the century mark, Sean. It's wonderful. What would be more wonderful if we could spend the entire episode talking about what's going on the ice. We will talk a lot about what's going on the ice, but we cannot ignore what happened Tuesday as we record this Wednesday afternoon. What happened with the Chicago Blackhawks and the fallout from the investigation, the independent investigation into the sexual assault allegations from 11 years ago with former coach Brad Aldrich, and who knew and what they did and did not do. Sean, this was a massive story. Stan Bowman is out as the GM, and Al McIsaac is also out from his role underneath Stan Bowman in the front office of the Blackhawks. A huge story Tuesday, covered on NHL.com, and we just can't ignore it.
Dark day for hockey, and you know it needs to be discussed, and I thought the report was sober to read, but necessary, and I think the discussions that everybody's having are necessary. I think sometimes hockey is very prone to look at itself and you know try and see what's wrong, and this is a case where it has to happen, and we need to move forward from it. The lessons need to be learned, and the culture has changed since 2011, 2010. But there's more change that has to come. And I think this is going to spur it on. I know, you know, as we talk here on Wednesday, Joel Quenneville, who was the coach of the Chicago Blackhawks then, has had a meeting with his new team, the Florida Panthers, and discussed the issue. Jeremy Colleton, the coach of the Chicago Blackhawks, has had a meeting with his team at which one of the Wirtzes, who were the owners, spoke about what happened yesterday. And I think those conversations are important and they need to happen, and they're going to happen in the wake of this. So not a pretty day for hockey, but an experience that hopefully the whole hockey community can move forward and grow from.
Yeah, and certainly puts a stain on a championship run in 2010 for the Blackhawks, no question about it. But the bigger story and the more important issue is, I mean, too late, but now being dealt with, no question about it. But where do the Blackhawks go from here? You know, I mean, we know that Joel Quenneville is going to meet with Commissioner Gary Bettman, right? That he said that meeting is going to happen Thursday. Commissioner Bettman said he plans to meet with Kevin Cheveldayoff as well, now the GM for the Winnipeg Jets. He was with the Blackhawks, obviously, at the time. Those meetings are going to take place. We'll reserve judgment, just as the commissioner said he's going to do, until those meetings take place and what happens there. We know the Blackhawks have been fined $2 million. But where do the Blackhawks go from here? Stan Bowman's not their GM anymore. Kyle Davidson is the new interim GM. The team is not performing well on the ice. There's questions now circulating about the future of the coach, Jeremy Colleton, who, by the way, was brought in by Stan Bowman. And Stan Bowman might have been his biggest supporter, and now he's not there anymore. So there's a lot here, certainly off the ice, which is far more important. Let's not say it's not. It is. It's far more important of what happens about, you know, going on off the ice. But there's also issues that the Blackhawks now have to deal with that involve what goes on the ice. And those can't be ignored either.
No, they've had a horrible start to the season, and this certainly doesn't help at all. But I think as you look kind of going forward, there's a break here now, right? And 11 years is a long time in the NHL for there to be one voice and for there to be one person who's kind of deciding what a team looks like, what a team's made of. And now that's going to change. And some of the loyalties, you know, you mentioned that Bowman was Colleton's biggest supporter. I think that was true. And, you know, maybe that turns the heat up, but it also, you know, provides a fresh eye at everything that Stan Bowman has decided in the last few years. Let's face it. Chicago hasn't been the team that they were in winning three cups for a while now. They tried to fix it this year. They swung big. They went for the fences. Hasn't worked out yet. Small sample size, but there's a lot going on there. Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't been good. 829 save percentage. That's so un-Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, you wonder if it's the defense. You wonder if it's him. They've never had the lead. They're what, seven games in? They've never had the lead. Anybody in this league can get the lead. The Montreal Canadiens have had the lead. The Arizona Coyotes have had the lead. These are other teams that aren't good. It's almost incomprehensible that you haven't led for this long. It's an NHL record as far as I know. And then nobody's scoring. They're just not getting goals. You know, you look at, they have three guys who have more than one goal. It's Kubalik, DeBrincat, who has two, and Kirby Dach, who has two, and DeBrincat has two, and he's a -9. That's a pretty tough go right there.
Yeah. What about Seth Jones? Seth Jones has been on the ice for eight of the last 10 even strength goals they've allowed. Five goals against, you know, 6-3 to the Detroit Red Wings. He was on the ice for five of them, four of them at even strength. Taves, no goals, -6. Kane, one goal, -7. I mean, it's a tough time, certainly, for the Chicago Blackhawks, but let's not ignore the tougher time it is for John Doe in the case that, you know, they won't reveal who it was and everything else, too. So, interestingly enough, now before we get to that, actually, let's mention, we can't forget, obviously, Sean, Ian Cole from the Carolina Hurricanes. He's going to be joining us shortly. Talk about some positive things on the ice, because the Carolina Hurricanes are off to a terrific start, and Ian Cole, who in my estimation is one of the best talkers in the league. Can't wait to get him on the podcast, talk of and get his perspective on the Hurricanes and what's going on around the league. But interestingly enough, and you know, it's tonight, Wednesday night, the Maple Leafs are in Chicago to play the Blackhawks. And if there is a team that is going through as much turmoil on the ice as the Blackhawks, it is the Maple Leafs right now, with their slow start and, you know, all the questions circling and swirling around. And, you know, what about Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and John Tavares? And, you know, I mean, there's so much there with Toronto as well. So something's got to give in this game on Wednesday night at United Center. And by the time you listen to this, it might have already given. But we still like the Toronto Maple Leafs, Sean. What is your take right now on where this team is and, you know, the level of concern that there should be there?
Well, there's a level of concern. You know, you always want to say that it's a small sample. You look at some of the undefeated teams and you're like, small sample, they're not going to go 82-0. And then you want to look at the Toronto Maple Leafs and you're like, small sample, they're not going to win one out of every six games. Like, there's just too much talent there. But you're starting to wonder, right? Like, is it not talent? Is it something else? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It seemed to me that you set this team up to fail, that this is a moratorium on who they are. And if they're not good enough, there's going to be changes. Like, that's a tough way to walk into a season and to start with one win, you know, in your first six or seven games. And now you're like, well, maybe there's going to be changes. Maybe this accelerates that process. Like, you've pretty much entered the season with a guillotine over your head, and you know when it's going to drop. It's going to drop in the playoffs if you're not good enough. And then all of a sudden, you're not good enough in the regular season, and you start looking up, and you're like, I wonder if they're going to move the date up. And then you start gripping your sticks harder. And, you know, like, you watched the game the other night. They played Carolina, and Matthews scored, and it was as happy as I've seen him in a long time, because the pressure is excruciating. And then you look at a kid like Marner, right? And he hasn't scored since May 8th. That was in the regular season last year. That's a long, long time ago. He didn't score in the playoffs. He hasn't scored yet. He has 1 point in seven games. This is a high paid guy that's not doing his job for whatever reason. And the heat is boiling.
Well, it definitely is boiling on him. No goals on 17 shots. Actually, Darren Millard, who has the Chirp podcast, encourage you to listen to that as well. He had Nick Kiprios on, and Nick Kiprios was talking about Mitch Marner and the cap and how much he's eaten away out of it, and the pressure and the intense scrutiny on him. So certainly listen to that. But I mean, here's what I dealt with this topic in the mailbag for this week. Sean, the mailbag on NHL.com runs today, Wednesday. John Tavares has one goal on 25 shots. It's 4%. You know, he's averaged 13.1% shooter. You tell me all you want. The numbers, the history, the careers of these guys, it tells me that they're going to start going in for them. Like, you're not going to see these numbers continue for the next 10, 15, 20 games. I just don't believe it's going to happen. And Toronto Maple Leafs also, and I got this stat from NHL stats, they lead the National Hockey League with 71 shots from the low slot. They've scored five goals on 71 shots from the low slot. You know, as I do, the low slot, that's the great scoring chance area. They're not scoring from the areas where you routinely score from. They scored almost 17% of their low slot shots. I get that right. Last season, it's like 7% right now. Again, those numbers, Sean, they're not going to stay. These guys are too good. They're too talented, and the chances are too good that they're getting. But And this is where the but comes in. Even if they do start scoring, Sean, they've got other issues to deal with. They've got some defensive deficiencies. They got, dare we say, do they have a work ethic issue? Look at that Pittsburgh Penguins game. 7-1 against the Penguins, who don't have Crosby, Malkin, I mean, Rust, Gensel. How do you lose 7-1 to that? How do you let Drew O'Connor, an NHL player, no doubt, score a hat trick on you? Those are some of the issues. The offense is going to come along and they'll string together some wins because of it. But once again, we're going to be talking about the Leafs being too offensive, not enough grind in their game, all these things. And that's where, you know, once again, they're going to struggle, I think, because of those issues, not because of the lack of scoring. 13 goals for them, those numbers are going to go up.
I wouldn't be so sure. You talk about all those percentages. They're all NHL players. They're all highly skilled, just like Alex Ovechkin is, just like Lindholm is in Calgary, just like Mangiapane is in Calgary. Those guys are scoring. You know why they're scoring? Because they're confident and they feel good. And the puck goes on their stick and they know it's going in. My God, Ovi scored the other day with a broken stick on a flub shot. He knows the puck's going in. It doesn't matter. He's like, put the puck on my stick, boys. I'll score. Is there anybody in Toronto, maybe other than Jason Spezza, who should not be in this conversation? This is not why he was brought into the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's saying, no, I shouldn't say that. They're all saying, put the puck on my stick, I'll score. Is there anybody else in that room believing in their heart of hearts right now, you put that puck on my stick and I'll score for you? I don't think so. And as it gets worse, the skill doesn't matter anymore. It's all up here. And in case you can't see, because we're on the radio, I'm pointing at my super large cranium. It's all up here.
Look, I'll go back to it. I'm a believer in numbers at times, Sean. And I believe that the numbers are going to skew in the Toronto Maple Leafs' favor sooner rather than later, just because of the talent and the history that's behind that talent. But it doesn't change the issues that they have there. And I wonder now, are we now looking at, and you brought it up, are we now looking at, is Sheldon Keefe's job in jeopardy because of that? Is Kyle Dubas's job in jeopardy? Is Brendan Shanahan's job in jeopardy? Would any one of those three guys be in jeopardy mid-season?
Yeah, Kyle Dubas said it, right? He said, this is the year. We failed enough. We can't fail anymore. If we fail again, there's going to be changes. And he was talking about if they failed in the playoffs. We're talking about if this goes on much longer. Look, you don't get eliminated from the playoffs in the first week of November, but you do put yourself in a hole that becomes very difficult to dig out of. You know, there's that famous teams that are in the playoffs by Thanksgiving in America, American Thanksgiving, tend to be the teams that are in the playoffs when the playoffs actually do start. There's been some exceptions and there will continue to be exceptions, but you make life very difficult for yourself at that point. So it's getting late early in Toronto and they got to figure something out, and they have no flexibility. That's the other thing. Like, it kind of went by and nobody really said anything about it because it was a cute story, but the Toronto Maple Leafs signed a college kid to be their backup goalie because they didn't have enough cap space to call up a player to do it. That's problematic.
Meanwhile, their former goalie, Freddie Anderson, you know, all he's done is win his first five games with the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, who have outscored opponents 22-8 and are 5-0, you know, tied for the team record for the longest winning streak to start the season. So, and Toronto just saw it and Freddie talked about it. So, you know, talk about two different worlds, right? You got the Carolina Hurricanes with the former Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender, and you've got the Toronto Maple Leafs with Jack Campbell, who we had on the podcast not long ago and has been okay. I mean, I can't blame him, but two different worlds, Sean. And I think now would be a perfect time to lead into the better world of the Carolina Hurricanes and bring on, we were able to chat with Ian Cole, their new defenseman, ton of playoff experience in this guy. He's been around a lot of teams, so he's got an interesting perspective. And here's that interview with Ian Cole. Ian, thanks so much for jumping on with us. I got to say, before you even, you know, I talked you up as you're a great talker and everything like that. So you're going to have to bring it in this interview. All right.
It's a lot of pressure, but I'll see if I can rise to the occasion.
My first question to you is, you're new to the Carolina Hurricanes. Why is this team so good this early in the season?
Good question. I mean, I don't know if there's only there's one singular thing. I mean, I think it's the, you know, the fact that they've laid a fantastic groundwork of culture, obviously personnel, and systems over the past couple of years. And then, you know, they're able to adhere to everything that they've, that kind of foundational aspect of their game, as they bring in new guys, and with such a great culture, you know, you can really assimilate guys into that quickly. So I think that it's a lot of things, but I think it speaks to the character and the culture from, you know, our head coach on down through all the players. So I think it's been good so far.
I was going to ask you, and you answered it partially, but you've been around a lot of teams that have had good cultures, like the Pittsburgh Penguins jumped to mind immediately. You won a couple of championships there. What really drives that culture? Like in every sport, they talk about it, right? You go to the New England Patriots, and no matter what kind of player you are, the problems you've had in the past, the culture will fix it. And it's the first thing you mentioned about the Hurricanes. I'm curious, as a player, if you can explain where that culture comes from and how it develops with a team.
Yeah, again, I mean, it's tough to say it's one singular thing, but, you know, I think in the Hurricanes, especially, you know, I mentioned Rod and the head coach, and I think in that case, this is really where that starts. I say it starts because it needs to finish with all the guys in the locker room and the leadership in the locker room and the consistent, you know, voices in the locker room that are, you know, taking the coach's thoughts and what the coach wants and implementing them. And I think that you very much see that here with the leadership from Staal and Slavin and even the young guys, you know, Aho, Svechnikov, like these are all of our big name guys, our top players. And they are fantastic people. And really what it comes down to is they want to win. They want to win more than anything. And I think that is the best way to implement a good culture is to have a culture of winning. Because like you mentioned, you know, no matter what happened in the past, no matter what you've done as a person or a player, if you've been through troubles or highs or lows or whatever, focusing on winning tends to focus the mindset and kind of let everything else kind of fall by the wayside, if you will. So I think they've done a fantastic job of that here.
And I guess along those lines, for years now, we've heard, since Rod's been the coach, we've heard that the Hurricanes sort of take on the identity of their coach and what he was as a player. And, you know, that type of game that he played, you know, it's been through a training camp and a handful of regular season games, you know, being inside now as opposed to being outside and playing them every once in a while. Are you seeing that as well, that this team's identity is what their coach's identity was as a player?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think in today's NHL with how deep rosters are from line one through line four through, you know, D1 through D6 through goalies. I mean, you have a lot of talent on a lot of lines. You know, when I started, you know, the third and fourth line were not really close to the first or second line, right? And that was 12 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. But now every team seems to be very deep with a lot of skill and a lot of speed. So I think to be competitive, you need to start with the work. You need to start with working hard, with being competitive, with doing all those things, all the little detailed things that make you successful. And I think in that case, yes, we very much, you know, mimic our head coach in that sense. And then when you have all those things as a foundation to your game, then the skill can take over, you know, given the opportunities for that to happen. So I think you're spot on with that.
More importantly, have you challenged Rod to a gym challenge yet?
Wouldn't even dream of it.
That's the way to get in with the team, right?
Yeah, exactly. See who can do the most push-ups or something like that. Push-up. Wouldn't even dream of it.
He would still beat everybody. There's no question about it, I think. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a machine. No question. All right. I got to ask you, what is it like to play on the opposite side of Tony DeAngelo? Because we know what he's capable offensively, and we know he's not afraid to attempt things offensively at the same time.
Mm-hmm. No, you know, I think that, you know, obviously I didn't never met Tony, didn't know Tony before I got here. And I think that he is a fantastic hockey player. I think that you mentioned his offensive ability, you know, what he can do. You've seen that. I think he has like a point a game so far. I mean, he's running our power play, which has been very successful so far. And I think we've had some good chemistry, he and I, going for, you know, kind of going through games and going forward here. Hopefully it continues. And as you know, it's a growing, it's, there's, it's a grow, it's a growth kind of situation where, you know, you don't start the season. You want to finish the season, start playing much better than when you started, right? You know, you try to grow throughout the course of the year. And I think that we're continuing to do that. We talk through a lot of things and it's gone very well so far. So, you know, as a pair, you know, we want to do our job, which is, you know, set all the other pairs, all the other forward lines up for success, get pucks in while we're transitioning them as quickly as we can. And I think so far we've been pretty good at that.
Ian, I want to ask you about another defenseman. We talk a lot about Jacob Slavin, and the first thing everybody says is, oh, he's so underrated. You know, people should know more about him. I'm curious, as a defenseman in this league who had seen him for a number of times before you got to play with him, did you underrate him? And what is the best part of his game now that you've seen him for a month and a half or 2 months?
Yeah, I think I don't think I ever underrated him. I always thought he was really darn good. I always thought he was great. And as far as I don't think there's one aspect to his game that's like, oh, he's, you know, an unbelievable skater, or he's has a great shot, or he's really smart, or he makes great plays. I think he does all of those things. Like, I think he's tall, he's long, he's strong, he can skate, he has a great shot, he sees the ice. Like, he does everything that you would want your number one defenseman to do. He does it all. He plays defense. He doesn't give up much defensively. He can still produce offensively, maybe not at a super high point of game level, but I would make the argument that a lot of those guys you produce at a very, very high level as a defenseman are probably cheating somewhere else in their game to have the energy to do that. And he has no cheat in his game whatsoever. And I think that's why he's just been so solid and so good for this team for such a long time. And obviously will only continue to get better. So I think he's a fantastic player.
You know, we talk all about now the success of this team, the culture, what they've built and are continuing to build. And it just brings to mind, like, you played on championship teams in Pittsburgh, and it was, you know, they had won in 2009, and then it was a while to build it back up to what it became when you guys won back to back. Do you see similarities? And I know it can be hard because you're talking about the finished product from Stanley Cup champions to what is not a finished product yet, but are there similarities between the two in on the ice and also off the ice?
Yeah. I think that there are some very strong similarities. And it's, you know, you could talk about personnel and skill level and compare and contrast rosters, but I think that's less important than the aspects of like drive and determination and singular focus on a goal, right? Like, the goal for every team every year should be to win the Stanley Cup, regardless. Like, that is the end goal. That is the only thing that you play for. And this team has had success, but never really, accomplished that goal. So I think the singular focus, the drive for that one thing to win a Stanley Cup, is what needs to be present and is certainly present, like, with this team. Like, they realize that they've had a good team for a number of years, but how do we turn that corner? How do we actually get it done? And that's why the focus is on establishing those fundamentals early in the season and adhering to that game plan. But then also knowing that it's game, five or six of the season, that, you know, what matters is the playoffs. What matters is the process getting to the playoffs and doing all the right things and setting those habits going forward. And that's where the mindset from the coaching staff is at the moment. And I think that's where the mindset from the players are at the moment is, yeah, it's great. We're winning games. You know, we're undefeated. That's awesome. Game 5 doesn't matter. You know, game 95 or 105, those are the games that matter. So we're going to continue to build. We're going to continue to get better. We're going to continue to strive to push ourselves to get better until we get to that point of the season.
And you've played hockey in a lot of places and a lot of really good hockey markets. I'm curious what your observations so far are of Raleigh as a city to live in and as a hockey market.
Well, it's a great city to live in. It's great. I mean, it's, a lot of trees, It's warm. It's not, it doesn't get that cold. It's a fantastic place to live in a great little town. As far as the hockey market, you know, when I been around for a while, but certainly played some games here where there were more empty seats than seats with seats with fans in them at the old PNC Arena. But, you know, I think that you see when, you know, the team is good and the team, you know, really has a chance to win. There's a very, very passionate fan base here that I think was established when they won the cup in 06. You know, I got my hair cut the other day and I didn't tell the guy who I was, and he had no idea who I was. And he's like, "Oh, it's your sport." I'm like, "It's hockey." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I hear the Canes are actually like really good. Like, I need to go to a game." And it's just a random barber. He's like, "I'm not a hockey fan. I'm from Florida. Don't care about hockey." But, you know, just that word of mouth, people keep talking about it. And I think that you will see, you know, with success, just continue the popularity continue to rise.
Yeah, Raleigh is a cool little town. Great food, great barbecue, by the way. You know,
I've had plenty of barbecue.
I was going to ask if you've tried it out. I was assuming
prime barbecue. We did a cooking lesson there as a team. It's fantastic.
Prime barbecue. There, they get their own plug on the At the Rink podcast. There you go.
Yep. There you go. Slice some brisket my way.
Does it compare to any other market that you played in? Because it does have that like small town feel to it, even though it's not, you know.
Definitely. I would kind of compare it something similar to like St. Louis, maybe, where, you know, they had success a while ago and then they weren't very good, and then all of a sudden, this is when I was in St. Louis, which was, you know, what, 2010 to 2015, and people were picking us to win the Stanley Cups those years, and obviously we underperformed, obviously, but you know, there was a very, very passionate, although maybe smaller and like a smaller percentage of the people in town, but very, very passionate. And then you see with that continued success as they've had recently, you know, it just explodes. And I think that Raleigh is very much ripe for that.
Are you sick of Rocky Like a Hurricane yet?
No, I can never hear it enough times.
I'm curious, you mentioned the Blues and you know, how they kind of had to grow, and some of it happened after you left, obviously. Is that kind of, you know, when you look at your own career and you came into the Blues and obviously your first round pick, highly touted, everything, and it just took a little bit longer for you to develop maybe than people thought. And now you look at some defensemen and it's so fast. And how they come into the league and they're able to contribute right away. You look at Adam Fox, who was the Norris Trophy winner this year. Is there something that's changed in the position or the game that allows younger players to come in so much faster and be successful immediately?
Yes. And I will give you my opinion on this. I think that the game has changed significantly from when I came in the sense of that salary cap era. Teams need young players on entry-level contracts to contribute. There's no way you can get all veterans to get the job done, right? And I think that when I came in, it was very much a veteran-heavy league. And since then, over the past 12 years, it's gotten to a much younger, faster league. That being said, you know, I got Ken Hitchcock when I was there in St. Louis, who was a very veteran-heavy coach. You know, and for me to break into the team, I had to play near perfect hockey for every single game. And the first mistake that I made, I got yanked out of the lineup for like five games. So I think that teams realize young guys are going to make mistakes. And I think, what is the old adage that it takes about 200, 250 games for a defenseman to figure out what he's going to be long term. And I think that guys are getting that opportunity at a much younger age. Knowing that they need young players to contribute because of what was gone to salary cap. So I think guys are getting more leash early. And I think you see the benefit that provides for one, players, teams, and the league as a whole. You know, I think that when I started, it was very much a, you need to prove yourself for 3 or 4 years, and then maybe you'll get a bridge deal. Whereas now it's not exactly that same situation.
And so I guess that lends a question to yourself. How does a guy who's now north of 30, and no offense, not the fleetest of foot on the ice, can skate, no question about it, but I mean, You know
powerful,
what I mean?
Dan, powerful.
Yeah, powerful, powerful. How do you then keep up? What do you do to keep up with these, with this league that no question about it is getting younger and faster?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that the focus every summer is to get younger and faster and more agile and, well, ideally younger, but not happening, but faster and, you know, more agile, more explosive, all these things, like for me personally, right? So like I go into every summer thinking like, all right, like how do I get faster? You know, is it footwork off the ice? Is it, you know, all speed work? Is it all explosiveness? Like it's all these things that it's a conscious decision to say like, okay, I need to get, like, I've always been strong. I've always been big. How do I get lighter and faster every single year? And then I think on top of that, I mean, very rarely in hockey are you standing next to someone on the goal line and they're like, okay, puck's the red line, full on race. Right? It's not football where there's a whistle stopping everybody and everyone starts from a standstill, right? So I think that your reads as a hockey player and where you position yourself and where you put yourself on the ice is a large determining factor on how well you can play the game. And hopefully I try to be smart enough that I put myself in a good position where, you know, I'm not getting in a foot race with Connor McDavid and I'm in a position over top of him, hopefully taking away time and space, right? So I think knowing these things, acknowledging these things, and trying to put yourself in a good position, I think is crucial.
Does the training that you do now, that anybody in the league does now, even resemble what you did 12 years ago? Are they the same? Are they in any way the same?
I mean, they're still the same in the sense that you want to be strong, obviously, you know, you need to be strong, but you know, as far as Olympic lifts and trying to squat 500 pounds and just like, not even close. I mean, it's totally gone the other way where it's all fast twitch muscle fibers. It's all move weight as fast as you can. Yes, you want to be strong, but you want to be able to move weight powerfully and as quickly as you can. And that's has been the focus the past couple of years for me. And I feel like, you know, I'm still able to get up and down the ice as needed. And I feel really good about it. And the whole point is trying to improve yourself, right? So, you know, if I can get 3% better, 2% better with my skating every summer, you know, hopefully I can stay kind of ahead of that curve and continue to, you know, be able to think myself into good positions on the ice while still being able to rely on my skating at least a little bit.
All right. So last one for me, with all that said, if you were to challenge Rod Brind'Amour to something in the gym, what would it be? What would you have a chance to beat him at?
Oh man, that's tough. Cause I mean, he is a freak. That is true. That's tough. I mean, I'm naturally just very strong. So I don't know, maybe just trying to like load up as much weight as I possibly could and see if I could, cause I would be able to like jump higher than him or run faster. I don't know about these things. These are all kind of up in the air, but maybe just try to lift heavy. I don't know. That might be it.
It should be like you're a little bit younger than me, but not too much. So you might've seen it like the Battle of the Stars where you have all the events. It's like the decathlon and somebody wins it then. Yeah. Maybe that's what you guys should do as a team building.
I was thinking kind of like an American Gladiator type thing.
The difference in generations right there. Here's my last question for you before we let you go. Again, going back to being a defenseman, you have the night off. I don't know if you watch hockey when you have the night off, but you get to watch one game. Who's the defenseman you want to watch?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think there are a lot of really good players in this league, you know, and I've considered myself very fortunate to be a part of it and be able to play with these guys. But, you know, I know I talked about him earlier and, you know, I think Jacob Slavin is one of the better defensemen in the league, hands down, in terms of the offensive side of things, the defensive side of things. I like, you know, well-rounded defenseman personally. I think in today's game, you need to be able to do everything. You need to be able to make plays and do things offensively, but also, you know, I think it's, you know, guys can put up a ton of points, but if they're minus at the end of the year, you know, there's something wrong there. Right. So I think to win, to be successful, you need to be able to do everything. And he very much checks that box for me. I think he does everything.
Great stuff, Ian. We'll end it there. Thanks so much for hopping on with us for a little while here and giving us the insight. All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Really good talk there with Ian Cole, the defenseman for the Carolina Hurricanes, who, Sean, by the way, I had it number two in our Super 16. I have at number two in our Super 16 power rankings this week. You also have them at number two this week, and they may very well be the number two team in the power rankings. All right, I will give it away. They are the number two team in the power rankings. And, you know, we use 14 people send me their Super 16, their own version of what the Super 16 looks like. I got a point system, got a whole system assigned to it. And Carolina dropped in there at number two for the second straight week behind the Florida Panthers. I mean, this team is good. We knew they were going to be good. And we heard there from me and Cole a lot of reasons why they're good. And I'm not surprised at all that they're sitting there at number two. And frankly, I mean, they could be in a top five all year long with the way they play.
I thought you were saying that Ian Cole was at number two. I was like, that's pretty good. If he by himself is at number two in the Super 16, and he should, because what a great talker. A great locker room guy. But no, we knew Carolina was going to be good. They have the coach of the year. They have an incredibly deep defense. They're three lines deep, at least. And again, it gets back to what we just talked about. They're confident. You watch them play. They're fast. They're not thinking. They're having fun. They attack. And they have a belief when things go wrong that they're going to come back. Again, that Austin Matthews scores and you're like, oh, here comes Toronto. Bing, bang, boom, it's over. Carolina's celebrating, and that's the end of it. Like, they never panicked. They never thought twice about it. They're like, oh, well, other team's going to score. We're going to score more. Here we go.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much all that's left for Carolina. We know how good they can be in the regular season. What's left for them is to do it in the playoffs. And, you know, they're another one of those teams that's got to get there, get with their game in order and get over the hump. In the playoffs, no question about it. They are a really tough. They're not just good. They're tough, you know, and like they're mentally tough, like you just said. And they're fun to watch. They're just one of those teams that I just enjoy watching, too. I love watching Aho and Teravainen and those guys do their thing. Slavin remains one of the most underrated defensemen in the league. So they're good. Sean, interestingly, though, we each had the same top four in our Super 16s, Florida, Carolina, St. Louis, Edmonton. Now, as of today, Wednesday, they are the four unbeaten teams. I had a Super 16. You had a Super 17. You did put 17 teams in. So with all due respect to the Dallas Stars, they didn't make it into your Super 16 because you can't count.
I cannot count, and I shouldn't be in trouble. And I bet you I was either last or second to last in getting my Super 16 in behind Tim Campbell, our colleague. It was a mess this week because look, the first time you do it, you're like, I'm going to go on last year, maybe think a little bit about what happened this week. And then you pivot this week, right? The sample size is getting big enough where you're like, can I still count on last year? You know, if so, Toronto's up there because they were really good last year and other teams aren't up there. Like, where do you put San Jose? But now you're deep enough in, you know, where do you put Calgary? Last year, they wouldn't have been on my list. This year, you watch them, they're one of the best teams in hockey. And they're just scary. If you don't wake up and show up for the Calgary Flames, you're all done. They'll put three, four, five up on you in the first period on the road. It's been crazy. They blitzed Washington 3-0 in the first period, got four up on the Devils last night in the first period. Washington came back and made a game of it. The Devils never really found their way back. But they're a scary team. So is that what you count? Or do you say, they weren't that great last year. They couldn't really figure it out. So the bottom of my order got a little wonky as I cut and pasted and moved people around. So I guess Dallas was in the in last week's, and I didn't erase enough. But thanks for pointing out my foibles. Now that we're doing that, I'm going to keep track. And maybe each week I'll just point out one of your mistakes.
You had Calgary at five. And to me, Sean, let's talk about them a little bit because I agree with everything you just said about this team. They're starting to develop that Daryl Sutter mentality too. They are a hard, grinding, tough team. And they got a guy like Andrew Mangiapane. Every time he touches the puck, it seems like it goes in the net. The guy's got goals in four straight, six goals in four straight. Go back to last season. He's got 12 goals in the last 10 games he's played in the National Hockey League. And oh, by the way, he had four goals in four games for Team Canada at the World Championship too. this guy is just scoring. And he talked at the at Madison Square Garden after the game. And I actually, you know, the other night when they won 5-1 against the Rangers, and I actually asked him, you know, there was a play in that game where the Rangers just, Patrick Nemeth just gave him the puck. Basically, it was a play behind the goal line, the Rangers goal line. And Patrick Nemeth just, he just handed him the puck basically. And Mangiapane quickly turns, bang, fires a goal. If you're not scoring, and we can go back to the Toronto Maple Leafs, like if that's Austin Matthews or if that's John Tavares or if that's Mitch Marner, to your point, if you're not scoring, are you just turning and firing there, or are you turning and looking and thinking and looking to make a play? This guy's scoring goals. Blake Coleman looks terrific in a Flames uniform right now. Elias Lindholm is, you know, Elias Lindholm is playing his way into the Selke Trophy conversation. The other night, Chris Tanev, and actually in the morning I asked him about Elias Lindholm, and he's called him a defenseman's dream. And this is not about his offense. It was about his defense. It's a defenseman's dream. And yet this guy is scoring a ton too. So I think they're the most surprising team in a good way in the Western Conference right now, because I didn't know what the Calgary Flames were going to be, but they're establishing an identity now that, like you said, I mean, you better show up if you're going to play them, because you will get run out of the building real fast.
Yeah, the two things that scare me is, you know, you talk about the numbers one way. There's no way either one of those guys score at this rate. They're scoring a goal a game. So we're not going to get to the end of the year and have two guys at 80 goals and neither one of them be named Ovechkin. So you want to see some depth scoring. You want to see some other guys get involved. And then, you know, I mentioned Washington and even a little bit with the Devils, who are a young team and really kind of got run out of their own building. They found a way back. They got three goals. They made it interesting at the end. The Capitals made it all the way back. Like you said, that this is a Darryl team, and it is. They're physical. You're going to get 100% effort, but they haven't learned to clamp it down yet. They'll go out, they'll score a few, and then they kind of, oh, well, game's over. And it's not in the NHL, and they need to develop that attitude where the game is over. It's 3-0, the game's over. That other team needs to know there's no breath. You're not going to be able to take a breath. It's just going to be misery for the next 40 minutes, and you might as well not put up a fight because you're just wasting your energy. Save it for the next game, because you got nothing here.
Yeah, and that's the next step for them. I mean, that's the difference between them being a legitimate contender and just being playoff fringe as the season goes on, right? I mean, that's where they have to take that step. But so far, so good. So far, not so good. Colorado, Sean, I asked you, it was a couple of weeks, it was last week maybe, I think it was, do we get concerned about the Colorado Avalanche yet? And you said, no, absolutely not. No panic at all. I would imagine the answer might be the same, but Sean, I was watching them last night against Vegas. Something's missing. You know, they are, McKinnon's great, Rantanen's great, Landeskog, that line, I could watch them all night long. That they always have the puck. It's incredible. Like, I'm actually amazed that they don't score on every shift, because they're always generating. But there's a drop-off behind them and say, Kadri and Burakovsky, that I don't think existed for the Avalanche last season. You know, we're talking about guys like, you know, Jason Megna and Logan O'Connor and Darren Helm, Curtis McDermott and Martin Kaut and Ranta Sampo, who are getting in and, you know, bottom six role. And I wonder now, did we underestimate the depth issue that could exist there with the Colorado Avalanche? And if we did, they're not going to be nearly as good as I thought they were going to be. And I, from what I've seen through six games, yes. I mean, I underestimated what they don't have anymore in the guys like Brandon Saad and Jonas Donskoy and, you know, and a few others, you know, especially up front at the forward position. And that's not even to bring up Darcy Kemper, who has been average at best so far.
Well, and that was the question mark coming in. He had to be good, but let me give you another number. Their power play, 9%. Colorado Avalanche power play, 9%. Nathan McKinnon, Rantanen, Makar, not going to happen. They go at 18, 20% is where they should be. It's another goal or two a game. They're going to be okay. The other team you asked me about last week, whether I was ready to panic or not, was the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then they went out and they lost to Buffalo, but they put a pretty good number on that Pittsburgh team you were talking about. So again, championship caliber teams, final eight teams with really good pieces, I don't worry about them yet. Talk to me in mid-November, which I guess is only a couple of weeks away, but talk to me then, and we'll go from there.
Fair. You, by the way, had the Lightning at 14. I had them at 8 in the Super 16 this week. We each had Colorado at 12. I mean, anywhere between 8 and 16 was fine for me for the Lightning, just because it really depends on what you believe them to be now versus what they've shown you that, you know, that they are technically right now. And I believe that they're legit and still, no question. But that was a big win. That was a huge win for them against Pittsburgh. This is the team, Pittsburgh, that came in and spoiled opening night, the banner raising night for the Lightning. They're coming off just a bad loss against Buffalo. That wasn't necessarily a bad game. They just couldn't score, you know? And now you're starting to, you know, oh boy, I mean, you know, are we going to be the same team? This, that, and the other. That has to start creeping in. And then they go out and they put a 5 spot up against the Penguins, who, yeah, okay. Okay, the Penguins are depleted. We know that. But this depleted team also just won 7-1 against the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? So Mike Sullivan remains one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the league. You know you're going to get a game from them, and they put up a 5 spot. They scored 2 very quick goals to jump out to a 3-0 lead. I think that was big for the psyche of the Lightning to realize they're still getting into the realization of this is a new season and it's going to be hard. And, you know, you get bounced around a little bit early and then you come back with a game like that against Pittsburgh. It, you know, to me, it shows the sign of the resiliency that we need to see. And we have seen for so long from the Lightning. I mean, they didn't lose back-to-back games in the playoffs for 2 years.
No. And there's that belief and that's going to happen. But you talked about the 2 quick goals they scored. They weren't as nice or as meaningful as the 2 quick goals that Nick Ehlers scored last night. Oh my God. The first one, the short side goal, like you're just like, and I think about that kid and I think about, man, if he played in New York for the Rangers, or if he played in Toronto, or he played in Boston, he would be a guy that we talk about every single day because of the things he can do. And so, you know, we've gotten this far into the show and we've talked about so many things and we didn't talk about that.
And they were his first 2 goals of the season, by the way. And, you know, this is a guy that obviously needs to score and it's, you know, needed. They were an impressive win, no doubt. They've won 3 in a row without Mark Scheifele and without Blake Wheeler, who are both in COVID protocol. They're 5-for-12 on the power play in their last 4 games. Now I'm talking about this and I'm saying, why didn't I rank them? You know, like, why didn't I have them in there? And I guess, you know, there's no good reason why I didn't have them in there. I had the Rangers at 16 and the Sharks at 15. You didn't have the Buffalo Sabres, though. Why didn't you have the Buffalo Sabres in your Super 16?
Because I don't think I believe yet. There's too much bad to outweigh the little bit of good that's happened so far. I love what they're doing there. You know, that win against Tampa Bay was huge. I thought they played well against Boston. Like, when they play good teams, they play well. But it's going to take a while for what's happened in the past to be erased for me. And everybody does their Super 16 in a different way, but I'm just having, and I wrestled with it for a long time. I'm just having an issue with kind of wiping the slate clean. It's what we talked about, why I ended up with 17 teams, because I'm trying to balance what happens now with early in the season with who a team was last year. There's a lot of mirages early in the year. You know, we talked about it personally, like Lindholm and Mangiapane aren't going to have 82 goals. And there's a lot of mirages team-wise. You get rolling a little bit early or you get down a little bit early and all of a sudden you're the worst team in the league or the best team in the league. And then over an 82-game season, it evens out. I think Buffalo's going in the right division, right direction. But I don't know in my mind that they're a top 16 team yet. Was I the only one that didn't have them?
Oh, I don't think so. I'd have to look it up, but I don't know. You were, I don't believe you were the only one, but it was a minority. They did
trying
make
to
it.
Play a little gotcha with me.
I don't know. I'm not going to go searching it up right now as we're chatting here, but I had them at number 14 and the win over Tampa put me over the top to put them in. But I know exactly what you're saying. And that's what's going to happen here, especially as we do our Super 16. But as you look at the standings in general, you're right. There are mirages at the start of the season. And, you know, is Colorado a mirage for what they're doing now? they should be way better. Same with Vegas, had a 4-game losing streak before they finally beat Colorado. What about the St. Louis Blues? Because, you know, the Blues to me are not a mirage. You know, they are now sort of back to the identity of what we expect Craig Berube's teams to be.
Is it sustainable? Can they score 5 goals a game in this league? The Edmonton Oilers can't. So I don't think the St. Louis Blues can, but they can be this good. They can be a team that can win 5 out of 6 on a regular basis. I think, you know, they get good goaltending. They're deep defensively. Tarasenko is playing well. Like, that was one of the big questions coming in, right? What was going to happen with Vladdy? Was he happy? Could he be happy? He's smiling a lot as the points are piling up, and he's being played a lot. You know, credit to Craig Berube. He said he's on the team. He's going to play. I don't care that he asked for a trade. I don't care that he's unhappy. He's one of the 20 guys I have at my disposal. He's playing him 15 minutes a game, and Tarasenko's producing. And that makes the whole lineup deeper, you know? So they're legit. And then the crazy thing is the player of the week this week in the AHL, Scott Perunovic, defenseman for the St. Louis Blues. He has 9 points in 5 games. Didn't play last year because of injury. Hobie Baker winner. Like, he's just waiting. Hey, here I am down here playing in Springfield. Got any use for a point of game defenseman? And they don't. They're waiting.
You're right about everything you just said. And the Tarasenko thing is so, so vitally important. He is part of it. He's producing. There's no stink. There's no stain resulting from that at all. What I love about the Blues, they've allowed 11 goals this season, 6 in the third period. All of them after they've built 3 goal leads, right? So they're giving up garbage time goals after they're leading, and that's it. They are a lock it down, tough team. And the other thing that I'm really liking from what I see from St. Louis is that we talk about depth and how valuable and important depth is, and youth mixing with veterans. They've got a young guy on each of their 4 lines with veteran players. You know, we talk about a Kyrou and a Jake Neighbors and a Robert Thomas, right? I mean, they've got youth mixed with veterans. It's a mix that's working for them right now, and they look really good. However, Sean, Ryan O'Reilly's out for the next 4 games. Big test coming for the St. Louis Blues when you don't have that particular player, because that guy, more than anybody else on that lineup, is the engine that makes it go.
Again, like, I think Craig Berube's like, that's okay. We need a test. But they're a legit team. I mean, they're not that far removed from being the best team in the league. And their fall was so fast that we just assumed that that's what it was, and it wasn't a glitch. Maybe it was just a glitch.
Yeah, well, a lot of changeover there too. So lots of hockey to be played, though. I think we covered a lot of it this week, along with everything that's off the ice.
I have a question for you, Dan, though, before we go. Friday, I think we're probably going to run it. When we were at the player media tour, we had access to 30-plus players, and we did a lot of serious stuff with them, but we did some fun stuff with them. And one of the fun questions we asked them, Halloween is on Sunday. A, I want to know what you're going as. But B, one of the questions that we asked all of the players was, if you were going to dress up as an NHL player, who would be the best one to dress up as? So who are you going as on Halloween? And if it was a hockey player, who would you dress up as?
On Halloween, I'm going to be going as a dad, wondering, do we really have to go to the next house on trick-or-treating? And I'm going to be going as a dad who's saying, give me all of the Reese's peanut butter cups. That's my costume. All right. And my kids don't like peanut butter, so it's a wonderful thing for me. So otherwise, no. Maybe I'll put my son's going to be a zombie baseball player. Maybe I'll put some paint on my face to help it out too. Probably not. That's a great question. Who would be a good hockey player to dress up as? Man, the first one that immediately came to mind, he's not in the NHL anymore, is Jaromir Jagr, right? But yeah, I'm talking like Jagr 91 version. Of Jagr, right? Mullet wearing Jaromir Jagr, just over from the Czech Republic, Jaromir Jagr. That would be a really good one to do. Maybe Joe Thornton, full bearded Joe Thornton, shirtless. I wouldn't do it, but you know, maybe a full bearded Joe Thornton could be a good one too.
Well, Well, the big one, and I don't want to give away the whole story, and I can't believe you didn't think of it because it was almost universal, is Brent Burns.
Well, I went Thornton instead.
The beard, yeah. The long hair, maybe some camouflage, maybe some sort of wild animal walking along with you from his ranch. But the other good ones, like Joel, was Klingberg. Like Nick Robertson said, hey, I'll just dye my hair blonde and knock out a couple of teeth and I'll be good to go. Fox said Panarin, but he went on the bread theme. He's like, I'll dress as the bread man. So I don't know if he was going to make himself into a loaf of bread or what. But it's an interesting question. There were a couple of Ryan Ellis's because of the red beard. But yeah. Halloween's always one of my favorite holidays, and I love the NHL players when they have their Halloween parties, and then the pictures start to sneak out in the next couple of days, and you see everybody dressed up in their costumes with their wives and all kinds of themes. So it's an awesome time.
Yeah, no, it's great. I also might say Jared Bednar just so I could have his hair, but you know, I can't. So anyway, but this was fun. This was good. You know, obviously we started the podcast on a very serious note, a very important note, but on the ice stuff and the Halloween stuff, a lot of fun, Sean. And of course, you know, you can continue to follow us at the rink on Twitter, at DRosenNHL on Twitter, at @SRourke_NHL on Twitter, and send us some questions. We'll address them on the next podcast. If you do, listen to The Chirp with Darren Lahr, Draft Blast with Mike Morreale and Adam Kimmelman, and the Fantasy Podcast with Pete Jensen and Rob Reese. So listen to it all and enjoy the hockey as it goes on through the next week.